The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a rather cheerful thing on how to lift your own spirits. We all feel down now and then, especially lately, and that's pretty evident. These techniques can help you bounce back. And there's a cute picture of a glass jar with a whole bunch of smiley-faced little, looks like little gumballs. On a freezing January evening, Ashley Astrew sat in her car in an Omaha, Nebraska parking lot, working up the courage to go into a comedy improv class. For 20 minutes, the 33-year-old journalist and mom of two sat with swirling thoughts of self-doubt. Oh my God, I can do this. I can't do this. I'll be the worst one. Then she turned off the engine, took a few deep breaths, and went inside. For Astrew, trying improv was the first small step to improve her self-esteem. All my life I've lacked confidence, she says. I didn't have the courage to try anything new. So she made a list of all the things she was afraid to attempt, and then asked herself, what if I didn't let my excuses win? Improv was her biggest target. Her fear dissolved as soon as she walked into the class. Her classmates were also beginners, and she discovered that she was perfectly capable of earning a few laughs and making new friends. Over the next 2 years, Astrew went on to tackle other what-ifs, including writing a book. Self-esteem is like a muscle. You have to work it constantly, she says. Some people are blessed with a seemingly unshakable positivity, but most of us need to learn how to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. Psychologists say we tend to experience our lowest self-esteem in adolescence and spend much of our adult lives slowly building it back up. Staying positive has been tough this past year. Since the pandemic began, 3 times as many American adults have reported symptoms of depression or anxiety, the malevolent cousins to low self-worth, compared with 2019. Thankfully, like Astrew, we can learn to feel better about ourselves and strengthen our feelings of hope. Of course, anyone experiencing severe or persistent symptoms should seek professional help. Here are 8 science-backed strategies to improve your relationship with the person in the mirror. Embrace the upside of feeling down. First, realize that negative emotions aren't inherently bad. They can be useful. That ping of anxiety gets my attention and says, hey, you need to focus on this, says psychologist Ethan Cross, author of Chatter, The Voice in Our Head, Why It Matters and How to Harness It. If you need to deal with an immediate problem, say rating in overspending, that call to focus is helpful. But negativity spirals into something harmful when a particular thought circuit just won't shut off. If you can't sleep because of it, feel physically stressed all the time, or keep rehashing the same situation, those are signs you need to employ tools to break the cycle, says Cross. Engage in smarter self-talk. In his lab at the University of Michigan, Cross asks his subject to talk to themselves in the second person, to use their own names instead of saying, I'm so nervous about this meeting on Tuesday. For example, say, your name. Actually, you would probably say my name, so I say Jim. You seem pretty nervous about this meeting. Cross's research shows that this simple shift in language gets people into problem-solving mode quicker. They turn into coaches and start advising themselves, taking stock of the problem and figuring out if they have the resources to meet it, Cross says. Change your view, literally. If you are forlornly looking out the window, lost in a thought loop, walk to a different window. Alternative perspectives help us digest our experiences and change our physical view intuitively. Jogs a different emotional one as well. When I'm stuck feeling a certain way and I choose to walk away and look for something better, that's a choice to do something good for myself. That in itself is a treatment, says Sasha Storolasi, LCSW, an end-of-life counselor to terminal transplant patients in New York City. Oh boy, that's got to be a tough job. Repeat a task you're good at. Canadian psychologist Patrick Keelan plays piano every day. It's one way he practices what he preaches. When he's helping people with low self-esteem, he suggests that they routinely engage with activities that use or improve their skills. When you're doing something that you're good at or getting better at, it gets harder to think negatively about yourself, he explains. So don't wait until you're feeling confident to work on your chess game, learn to build furniture, or try out a new recipe. According to a 14-year study of 7,000 volunteers, increasing the self-perception that you're mastering an activity of interest to you can boost your self-esteem at any age. Reminisce. While some research suggests happiness increases with age, studies also show that self-esteem peaks at age 60, then declines. As people get older, the loss of loved ones, professional identity, and independence can threaten the sense of who they are. Telling someone stories from the past may bolster self-esteem in this key moment. In a 2015 study from Iran, a group of widowed men 60 and over shared memories of the events and life lessons that had shaped their lives. This promoted a sense of identity and a positive contribution to the next generation, and reaffirmed the meaning of their lives, the researchers reported. Take a trip down memory lane by looking through a photo album with loved ones or playing music that reminds you of meaningful moments. Music that reminds you of meaningful moments can boost your self-esteem. Believe that you matter. A 2020 study reveals that mattering, the bedrock belief that you are important and worthy of consideration, is linked to joy. Strong personal relationships are the best aids to believing you matter, says an article published last year in the Journal of Mental Health and Addiction. Spend time with loved ones and remind them you offer a shoulder to cry on. It's nice to know that someone cares, and they in turn can count on me when I need help, said one person who was interviewed. Maintaining a sense of control, especially over your health care issues, also boosts the sense of self-importance. When you take the initiative to find medical providers attentive to your needs, or ask family members not to bypass you when medical decisions are being made, you reinforce the feeling that you are worthy of attention. Share your feelings carefully. When we feel strong negative emotions, we often feel an urgent need to talk about them. Research shows that this doesn't always ease our turmoil, nor do venting sessions where both parties complain. Such interaction can reactivate negative emotions, making us live through them again. What's important is to get feedback that moves you beyond the negative feelings, says Cross. Talk about what's bothering you, but be deliberate, he says. Go to someone empathetic, someone who doesn't just listen, but who gives you advice and helps you see the bigger picture. Storolasi puts it bluntly, you need people who lift you up. If you don't have those people, you need to find them. Get moving. There's no silver bullet for improving low morale, but exercise is the closest thing we have. Not only is it good for stress management and general mental health, but it also provides a sense of confidence and accomplishment. Over the years, dozens of studies have indicated that exercise has a significant impact on physical self-worth and self-perceptions. The activity you choose matters less than enjoying it, sticking to it, and getting at least a moderate challenge out of it. Going to the gym is not an option. If going to the gym is not an option or very enjoyable to you, then head outdoors for a run or just a nice brisk walk. Your true stories in 100 words. Monkey in the middle. I often go to the primate building at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. A chimpanzee named Bo began to recognize me. He would interact with me and mimic my gestures. When I told my friend Jerry this, he was skeptical. So one day I brought him with me. Then Bo came down, looked at me and my friend, and then went to get a drink of water. When he returned, Bo spit his mouth full of water at Jerry. Was he jealous? We had a good laugh. Probably was. That's Sandy Rosabun from Euclid, Ohio. In a different league. I ran a 5K for charity. After the race, I wanted to see how my time ranked in my category of men ages 30 to 34. I was close to the bottom, which I chalked up to being 34. The other guys were simply younger. I was determined to rank higher the following year when I'd be 35, in the 35 to 39 age bracket. But that year, I was mistakenly registered in the over 70 category and finished 4th out of 7. I can't even win guys against guys double my age. Joe Balthasar, Palatine, Illinois. A hard pill to swallow. As a pharmacist, I counsel patients on their new medications. One day I was informing a woman about the side effects of her prescription, specifically drowsiness. You won't be able to work or drive while you're taking this, I told her. Do you have any questions? Her little boy, who had been quietly standing next to her, raised his hand. Can't you still cook? He asked. Of course you can, I replied. He explained ruefully. He was hoping you'd say no. Linda Hernandez, Manchacha, Texas. 13 Things. 24 Karat Nuggets About Gold by Emily Goodman. I thought it should be Emily Goldman, but it's not. Number 1. Pure gold is so ductile, translation stretchy, a single ounce can be drawn out to a thread 50 miles long without breaking, at which point it would also be too thin to see. If you did this to all the existing gold in the world, it would wrap around the earth 11 million times. Number 2. Contrary to popular belief, biting on gold is not a reliable way to tell whether it's genuine. Other metals are also soft enough to show teeth marks. And though many champs chomp down on their prizes, Olympic gold medals haven't been made from that metal since the 1912 Summer Games in Stockholm. Modern gold medals are made mostly of silver. Those from the 2016 Games in Rio contained only 1.2% gold. Number 3. The Nobel Prize medal is still made of gold, though it was downgraded in 1980. It went from 23 carats, 24 is pure, to an 18-carat core coated with a 23-carat gold coating. The gold in each medal is worth about $8,000. Number 4. A naturally yellow element, gold changes color when it was mixed with other metals, which gives it added strength. White gold contains nickel or palladium. Rose gold gets its hue from copper. There's even green gold, which has a silver and sometimes zinc or cadmium. To determine how much gold is in a piece, divide the carat content by 24 and multiply by 100. The resulting percentage is the amount that is gold. That's interesting. Gold, number 5. Gold has been used in medicine for millennia. The ancient Romans made metal bridges out of it, a practice they learned from the Etruscans. For much of the 20th century, doctors reduced their rheumatoid arthritis pain and swelling with intramuscular injections of gold compounds that have anti-inflammatory properties. Today, some oncologists use gold compounds to shrink cancerous tumors. Well, that's interesting. Number 6. The term bullion, which refers to gold bars or coins ready to be traded, comes from the Latin word for boil. That's how to remove gold's impurity at a mere 5,173 degrees Fahrenheit. Number 7. The U.S. Treasury currently holds 447.3 million ounces of gold. About half of it is stored at Fort Knox, a stash that's worth more than $130 billion. Security at Fort Knox is so tight, only one president has ever been inside the vaults. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the same president who effectively took us off the gold standard in 1933. The United States didn't fully abandon it until 1971. Number 8. Most of the gold is now mined in China. Most of the world's gold is now mined in China. The country overtook South Africa for historical gold production in 2017. But the world's largest gold crystal, an extremely rare geometric formation that can appear in gold specimens, weighed 7.7 ounces and was found decades ago in Venezuela. Number 9. Among the more surprising and unpleasant sources of gold treated sewage. In 2015, after analyzing sewer sludge from a local treatment plant, researchers at Arizona University concluded that sewage produced each year in a city of 1 million people includes an average of $2.6 million worth of gold and silver. Wow. Number 10. We have already extracted about 80% of the world's 244,000 mineable tons of gold. Ocean waters and seabeds contain about 20 million more tons. But this treasure remains largely untouched because of the prohibitive cost to tap it. But the biggest trove is in outer space. One asteroid alone, called 16 Psyche, has a few hundred quintillion dollars worth. Number 11. But so far, we've only brought gold to space, not taken any from it. Spacesuits and spacecraft are coated in gold to reflect harmful infrared radiation from the sun. Any instrument NASA wants to keep cool gets a gold coating as well, since radiation is also a great source of heat. This includes the James Webb Telescope, the world's most powerful space telescope, set to be launched later this year. Number 12. Pyrite, the mineral better known as fool's gold, has fooled many, including Christopher Newport, one of the founders of the Jamestown colony, who sailed a shipload of it to London in the 1600s. Although pyrite can be a disappointing find, it is often discovered near sources of real gold, so a miner who stops digging once he finds a piece of pyrite may be the real fool. Number 13. Don't go looking for a pot of the precious metal at the end of a rainbow. One version of this legend is more of a cautionary tale. When a poor Irish husband and wife pull the last carrot out of their garden, they catch a leprechaun dangling from it. The leprechaun agrees to grant all their wishes if they find his pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, leaving them forever to chase a fictitious fortune. From the island of unfit toys, in 1951, the A.C. Gilbert Company stopped selling its U-238 Atomic Energy Lab to aspiring nuclear scientists. Why? The kits cost about $500 in today's money, and they used actual radioactive uranium ores, though to be fair, they contained about as much radiation as a child would get from a day in the sun. More dangerous was Professor Wacko Exothermic Exuberance Chemistry Kit. The chemicals in this one started a few house fires. In 1994, the Consumer Product Safety Commission got them all pulled from the shelves. Okay, let's have a few giggles. There's a picture of an escape button from a computer, and underneath it, it works like a charm. Imagine being a spy right now, stuck at home trying to convince your family you have a normal job. Super unprofessional when ventriloquists argue that their puppet's over which one is the dummy. Figure that out backstage. Now that my boyfriend is working from home, I've asked we liven things up by pretending we're having an office affair. I like that one. My boss just called me into his office and told me I've been spending too much time on Twitter. Hold on. He's saying something else now? Please keep telling me to keep up the good work. The good work was an accident impossible to replicate. Virtual meetings are basically modern seances. Elizabeth, are you here? Is anyone else with you? We can't see you. Can you hear us? Food on your plate. I am Pistachios, an American success story. On a mild morning in November 1979, when a group of students clambered over the walls of the American Embassy in Tehran, I, the modest pistachio, might have been the furthest thing from everyone's mind. That day turned into an infamous hostage crisis. Few were likely focused on the fact that Iran buys far the largest suppliers of pistachios in the United States, or that the sanctions imposed by President Carter, which included a ban on importing me, meant that you were going to need a new source. At just a nickel a dozen of me, I had plenty of American fans back then. I started out as a popular snack among Middle Eastern immigrants in the late 1800s, but eventually spread to snackers of all ilk through bars, bus, and train station vending machines. You could spot them by their red-tinged finger caused by the dye Iranian producers used to cover the imperfections on my shelves. Harmless splotches from the harvesting methods. But only a minuscule crop of me came from within U.S. borders, specifically California's Central Valley. There, in the 1930s, a botanist named William E. Whitehouse, fresh off a tour of Iran's pistachio orchards, had managed to get one seed from one specific variety of tree, called kermit, after the Iranian city where it grew. It barely took hold. Some 40 years later, from just that one variety, from just that one seed weighing all of a 40th an ounce, sprouted all of America's pistachios. In California and around the world, my trees may live for more than 150 years, but they take a couple of decades to reach full production. The first U.S. commercial crop of just 1.5 million pounds landed in 1976, but then, thanks to ample acreage of appropriately arid farmland and also the necessary water supply, California's pistachios flourished. My American version was a sweet, pristine, high-quality nut that not only replaced the gaping hole left in the supply chain, but also overtook global demand. Chinese, Indian, and European shoppers increasingly sought American pistachios to the point that the current U.S. industry produces about 1 billion pounds of me annually, more than any other country. This 44-year boom in the wake of a 444-day hostage crisis amounts to one of the most successful botanical takeovers in American history. Yay! As the seed of the tree's fruit, actually not a nut at all, I grow in clusters like grapes, my hard shells splitting open with an audible snap when I'm ripe. By then, my hull has turned from green to white, and then to a deep rosy pink, and the translucent shell inside to opaque. My peel is both a snack and ingredient since my earthy sweet flavor, fatty riches, and crunch. I have the same amount of protein as almonds, but a smidge less fat, and my protein and fiber, plus the fact that you have to slow your roll and shell each gosh darn one of me before you eat it, makes me a favorite among dieters. I was first cultivated in southwestern Asia as early as 6000 BC. My status as a luxury snack goes back almost as far. The Queen of Sheba herself is thought to have hoarded all of her region's harvest for her court. My reputation as an aphrodisiac may have helped my popularity, although it is not altogether hearsay. My fats reduce cholesterol and improve blood flow, and very preliminary research suggests I might have improved erections for men who ate me regularly. Ooh! Thanks to the Silk Road trade, I slowly made my way into the cooking traditions of Italy and Spain, and other parts of southern Europe, as well as North Africa and China. By now, I'm prized in many cuisines, often in desserts, though I show up in savory dishes, too. I star in Moroccan tangines, often paired with chicken or lamb and dried fruits such as apricots or figs. Middle Eastern kenefe, a fragrant, salty, sweet dessert made from cheese and syrup-soaked shredded phyllo, and honey-drenched baklava. Of course, I'm also an ingredient in snack mixes, cookies, cakes, and yes, everyone's favorite green ice cream. Though note that most pistachios ice cream is flavored primarily with much less expensive almond extract. The specimens of me studded throughout are cover for the ruse. As for that other ruse, the Rouge Ruse, these days in the United States, Central Valley farmers have mastered the art of whisking me off to be processed as soon as I'm ripened and popped, leaving nary a splotch on my shell, and making my fans' red fingertips a thing of the past. And then there's a picture, oh man, that looks good, of a rack of lamb with pistachios, leaves, and it looks like a kumquat on the side. Boy, that looks good. Pistachio and Parmesan-crusted rack of lamb. Preheat oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Combine 2/3 cups finely chopped pistachios with 1/3 cup panko breadcrumbs and 1/3 cup of grated Parmesan. Melt 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter with 1 teaspoon fresh or dried thyme leaves and 1 minced clove of garlic over medium heat until foamy. Combine with pistachio mixture and stir until dry. Ingredients are evenly moistened. Season with salt and pepper. Season a 4-bone French rack of lamb, about 3.5 pounds, with salt and pepper. In a 12-inch cast iron skillet, heat 1 tablespoon vegetable oil over medium-high heat until nearly smoking. Add lamb racks and sear until browned, about 3 minutes each side. Transfer lamb to a work surface and rub 1 teaspoon Dijon mustard in an even layer on the fat side of each rack. Sprinkle pistachio mixture over the Dijon coating, then press to form a compact crust. Return rack lambs to skillet, crust side up, and roast in the oven until the thermometer registers 130 degrees Fahrenheit for medium rare or 135 for medium, 20 to 25 minutes. Let lamb rest for 5 minutes, then serve whole or carve carefully into individual chops. And it does look delicious. Bottle service. Be wary of strong drink. It can make you shoot at tax collectors and miss. Robert Heinlein, author. A bottle of wine contains more philosophy than all the books in the world. Louis Pasteur, biologist. The best way to avoid a hangover is to stay drunk. Dorothy Parker, humorist. A life well lived. And there's a picture of a woman cartoon here of her flying through the sky holding a platter full of food with one of those covers that you put over it in a restaurant, a glass of wine in one hand, a cape, and one of those blow things that you have for Halloween or birthdays, and a coned birthday hat on top of her head. Rules for being the age you are. Whether you're 20 or 120, the Author's Surprise-Filled Guide can help most anyone live happily ever after. By Megan McArdle. If, like me, you have recently entered the period of life known as middle age, take heed. The building years of your life are over, and what you are now is pretty much what you're going to be forever. Soon it will be what you were. You can no longer tell yourself that you might move to Lisbon, learn Portuguese, and take up the guitar. But you can follow a set of simple rules to guide you the rest of the way. Best of all, these rules work no matter what your age and state of life. First and foremost, be kind. Mean is easy, kind is hard. Once we reach eighth grade, most of us got the idea that the masty put down, the superior smile, and the clever one-liner are the signs of intelligence and great personal strength. But this kind of wit is, to borrow from the writer John Scalzi, playing the game on an easy mode. Making yourself feel bigger by making someone else feel small takes so little skill that 12-year-olds can master it. Always order one extra dish, an unfamiliar one at a restaurant. You might like it, which would be splendid. If you don't like it, all you lost was a couple of bucks. If you can't afford to order that one extra dish, then the restaurant is too expensive for your budget anyway, and you should find a cheaper one. Give yourself permission to be bad. You know what you're really good at? Things you've done many times before. Mastery is boredom. Unfortunately, we enjoy feeling like masters. We hate feeling like idiots. So we keep ourselves bored in order to protect ourselves from feeling stupid. This is a bad trade, and not the sort of bad I'm talking about. Go to the party even when you don't want to. 9 times out of 10, you'll be bored and go home early. But the 10th time you have a worthy experience or meet an interesting person, it will more than redeem those other wasted hours. Don't just pay people compliments to give them living eulogies. Tell them exactly how fantastic they are, in how many ways. Embarrass them. Here's a funny thing I've learned. No matter how many times you hear the words, "You're amazing and here's why," they never go out of style. The thing you want to, thing you kind of want to do someday, do it now. I mean, literally, pause reading this call and pick up the phone and book that skydiving session right now. I'll wait. Don't put it off until you have time to really relax and enjoy it. That will be approximately 3 decades from now, and it's highly possible you won't be able to enjoy it. I will never forgive myself for passing up the chance to go to trapeze school in my late 20s. I figured I could always do it later, little knowing that in my early 30s my lower back would decide to take up amateur dramatics. At least somebody got to perform. And tone down the cynicism. At some point in life, we get the idea that believing in things, art, politics, makes you a sucker, and that being real means accepting how rotten to the core everything is. True. There's a lot of rottenness in the world, but cynicism is radically incomplete. In fact, human beings are often splendid. The world is often glorious, and nature, red in tooth and claw, also invented kindness, charity, and love. Believe in that. Don't try to resolve fundamental conflicts with loved ones. The only people who win marital arguments about bedrock values are divorce lawyers. I mean, you wouldn't say, "I have a free hour. I bet I could solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and still have time for a spot of tennis." So why do you try the same hour to convince your spouse that potato salad should have pickles in it? Unless it is an existential threat to your future, out-of-control spending, wants, don't-want-kids, abuse, leave it alone. On your deathbed, your spouse and friends will be there holding your hand. The dream house you're going to buy will not be. Be grateful. No matter how awful your life seems at the moment, you have something to be grateful for. You have been granted 2 billion seconds on this planet, give or take. You're a billionaire. Many billionaires, however, squander most of their fortune on bitter recriminations about how unfair everything is. You won't get a refund from the universe for the time you spent brooding about the unfairness in there. You lose those seconds just as surely as you lose a second experiencing joy. Only they don't even give you something nice to remember them by. And always make more dinner rolls than you think you can eat. For some reason, dinner rolls are much larger in our imagination than in our stomachs. The cat's out of the bag. My email password has been hacked. That's the third time I've had to rename my cat. And since I haven't had to rename my cat, let's go ahead and switch over to Consumer Reports. And how about some auto recall questions answered? Automakers recall tens of millions of vehicles annually to correct faults that threaten safety. Often these issues aren't discovered until a model has been on the road for months or even years. They can range from software problems that could cause a car to stall unexpectedly to fuel leaks that could lead to a fire. Some recalls affect millions of vehicles, while others might include only a dozen or so. But every safety recall, no matter how small it seems, is important and needs to be addressed. A safety recall means that a problem has been identified that puts people at risk, says William Wallace, manager of safety policy at CR. Every recall should be taken seriously. Below are auto experts answer some of the most common questions about recalls and share advice on how to find out what to do if a car you own or one has to buy a recall. That's what we're going to read. How are recalls announced? Car companies are required to send recall notices by first-class mail, but these can arrive weeks after a recall is first announced online or may never arrive if the owner has moved. For the fastest alert, sign up for a recall reminder service such as Our Call Recall Tracker at cr.org/car recalls or through the National Highway Safety Administrator's Safer Car app. To learn whether your car has an outstanding recall, go to nhtsa.gov/recalls and enter its 17-digit vehicle identification number, the VIN number, usually found on the driver's side dashboard and viewable through the windshield. Are recall repairs free? Most of the time. Federal law requires all safety recall repairs to be provided free of charge for up to 15 years after a car was sold to the first owner. But if your car is older than that, you're not necessarily out of luck, Wallace says. Automakers and dealers will often voluntarily provide a safety recall repair for free, even for cars older than 15 years, so always ask. The automaker is not obligated to provide a loaner vehicle while the recall repair is being made, but some do anyway, when extensive work is needed. Many recall repairs can be completed in just an hour or two. Can a car for sale have an open recall? Unfortunately, yes. Federal law specifically bans the sale of new cars with open recalls, but no similar law exists to protect people who purchase used cars. Before a fire used car, enter its VIN at nhtsa.gov/recalls to find out whether it has any recalls that have not been addressed. If you're buying from a used car dealership, ask to remedy any open recalls before you take delivery. If you're buying from a private seller, you might need to take the car to the dealer yourself to have the recall-related issue repaired. If that's the case, make sure to do it as soon as you can. Should I worry if my car is recalled? Not as long as you have the recall repair made in a timely way. Recalls can be inconvenient, but they're evidence that automakers and regulators are taking safety seriously, and they help keep the vehicles we're driving as safe as they can be, says Jennifer Stockberger, Director of Operations at Consumer Reports Auto Test Center. While recalls can vary in terms of the possible risk posed, manufacturers do not issue them unless safety is somehow threatened, so you should always have the repairs made as soon as possible. And let's take a look at the time traveler that they do from years. In 1937, which is when they started, we test 15 sets of sheets and find that the biggest brand names prove inferior. Heavily advertised Pepperall sheets are flimsy and shrink, we report. In 1938, our first test of mattresses expunged 9 brands of Innerspring, which are enjoying great popularity, we say, but only a Spring Air with flexible coils is the best buy. In 1942, we test 42 pairs of men's pajamas for strength, shrinkage, and more. Though most are good, some patterned PJs run in the wash, so stick to collar-trailed pajamas, we say. In 1954, see our tests from foam rubber mattresses and measure spinal curvature using X-ray analysis. A Ward's Best model is tops for overall quality. In 1959, Bertha Berman patents a design for a fitted sheet with elastic pockets that fit around the edges of the mattress that nobody could fold. In 1964, CR finds that a heavier weighted blanket isn't always warmer. In our test of 29 blankets, acrylics are generally superior to wool ones and are moth-proof. In 1971, Charles P. Hall patents the waterbed, and it's a hit. Reportedly, 13 million waterbeds are sold in this year alone. In 1987, a national survey finds that 17% have had trouble falling asleep. Much of the difficulty is ascribed to stimulants like caffeine before bedtime. In 1992, Tempur-Pedic sells mattress toppers made with a material first made to cushion NASA pilots during flights. In 2012, we ranked 44 hotel chains, Wingate, Drury Inn and Suites, and Hampton Inn and Suites by Hilton, earn an excellent for bed comfort. And in 2021, we test mattress pads that can chill or in some cases heat you. The one above garners our top spot. That's the Chili Uller, $699 to $1,500, and it has a pump and everything. That's kind of neat. Okay, extend the life of these pantry staples. All-purpose flour lasts 6 to 8 months in the pantry after opening. 8 to 12 months in the pantry unopened, 1 year in the fridge after opening, and more than a year in the freezer. These storage techniques make pantry items last their longest, saving you money and extra trips to the supermarket. Flour. Consumers think flour is flour, says Nancy Bach, Senior Director of Communications and Marketing at the American Association of Family and Consumer Sciences. But if you don't use as much and leave the bag folded over in a cupboard, it might not whirl as well or may even get bugs. Tightly wrapping and refrigerating the flour bag can extend its useless all-purpose or bread flour's usable life up to a year, or stored in the freezer where it will keep even longer. Note that whole grain flour degrades more quickly because of the oils in the grain's germ. It lasts up to 3 months in a cool, dry place, 6 to 8 months if frozen. Pasta. Dried pasta in an unopened package can be stored and used for up to 2 years, even past its best-by date. Open dried pasta is good for up to a year, but egg noodles last just 1 to 2 months. Meredith Carruthers, MPH, Technical Information Specialist at the Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service, recommends storing dried pasta in airtight containers to prevent it from going stale and developing an off flavor. Bread. You can freeze bread, whole or sliced, depending on whether you'll be defrosting by the slice or the loaf. Just be sure to wrap it tightly in foil or plastic wrap and put it in a sealed container, and it will keep for 3 months. You can even pop slices straight from the freezer into the toaster. But don't refrigerate it. Baked goods can go stale faster in a fridge than if you stored them in a dark, cool bread box. Interesting. Olive oil. A bottle can last 3 to 5 months after opening, but the longer you store olive oil, the more likely oxidation will occur, and a large bottle is more prone to oxidation because of more exposure to air at the top of the bottle. So it's best to buy only the amount of olive oil you can use within a few months, and resist the urge to store it near the stove. Heat accelerates oxidation, says Selma Wang, Ph.D., a food science researcher at the University of California, Davis. Choose packaging that blocks light and air, such as dark glass. Toss it if it smells a little like Play-Doh or oil paint, which means it may have gone rancid. Whole grains. Healthy whole grains, such as farro, don't keep as well as refined grains, largely because of the oils that remain in the grain's germ. Store it in an airtight container in a cool place, and it should keep about 6 months. The freezer can double that. Totally different subject. What's the difference between the newest Mac laptops? Since 2006, all Apple computers have been powered by an Intel processor. The processor is essentially the brain of the computer. But the newest laptops from Apple, both 13-inch MacBook Air and MacBook Pro, now contain a processor developed by Apple itself, the M1 chip. The company calls it the biggest leap ever for a Mac, and there's good reason to believe that might be true. In our test, the new processor performed with admirable speed, rivaling other powerful chips on the market, such as the Intel Core 7 and Ryzen 7 processors. And when compared to the older Mac models they replaced, the new Air and Pro are faster in everyday tasks, says Antoinette Acidello, who oversees laptop testing at CR. The M1 can quickly compress and decompress digital files and makes using Apple's QuickTime video editing software a breeze. On the surface, the specs of these two 13-inch laptops seem so similar that it may be hard to choose between them. In our labs, they had similarly impressive performance in many aspects of our rigorous testing. Both excel in the ratings for display and sit at the top of our current ratings for all 12 and 13-inch laptops. Perhaps the biggest difference in our tests came down to battery life. The Pro can outlast the Air by 5 hours, making it more ideal travel companion. It is a smudge heavier than the Air, just 0.2 of a pound, due to the addition of cooling fan. The Pro also has a brighter screen, and the keyboard comes with a touch bar, a slim touch screen that stretches across the top of the keyboard like an extra row. Most consumers looking for an Apple laptop will be happy with the MacBook Air, Acidello says. At $300 less than the Pro, it's also good for your wallet. Only those who need extra power for extended or heavy use may prefer the Pro. The Apple MacBook Pro 13-inch M1 is at $1,300. The Apple MacBook Air 13-inch 2021 M1 is at $1,000. The Pro got 81, the regular Mac got 80. Both of them have good portability, performance, display, ergonomics. Versatility is a little limited. Battery life is 7.5 hours versus 12.5 hours. So that's a big difference, and the difference in weight is negligible. Well, the next section is kind of interesting because this is if you have tried the Instant Pot, which I haven't yet, but I'm thinking about it. There's a Duo 6 7-in-1 6-quart multi-cookie for $80, scored 75. One of the selling points of the popular Instant Pot multi-cooker is that it can be used as a slow cooker, pressure cooker, rice cooker, and steamer. But it often offers tempting add-on accessories. CR staffer Perry Santana Chote, bought 9 accessories to see which ones boost your Instant Pot game and which ones aren't worth your cabinet space or your dollars. Air fryer lid. That's at $79. That's almost as expensive as the cooker itself. This lid comes with a 3.5-quart air fryer basket that you slip into the inner pot, great for crisping a small batch of fries. But it also turns your pot into a mini convection oven capable of roasting, broiling, and more. It crisps the skin of a whole chicken beautifully, Santatoche says. Mesh basket for $30. A smaller basket nests inside a larger one, letting you steam 2 separate vegetables at once. But in our labs, Instant Pot models received a fair rating for steaming veggies. Do fine mesh wire baskets help at all? They didn't for me, Santa Chote says, after trying them in her home kitchen. A metal egg rack for $20. Instant Pot egg racks come in metal and silicone. Both hold eggs, 14 in the metal, 9 in the silicone, so that they cook evenly and the yolk stay centered, Santucci says. The multi-tiered metal racks are great for pot-in-pot cooking, meaning 2 dishes at once. Ceramic non-stip inner pot, $20. Instant Pot models come with a stainless steel inner pot that's great for most meals, but can be a pain to clean if you make sticky, starchy foods, Santatoche says. The ceramic pot was a breeze to clean, even after cooking cheesy pasta. and it's oven safe up to 680 degrees, and that's $20 as well. A tempered glass lid for $15. The glass lid lets you see what's cooking and provides a looser seal than the pressure cooker lid. Instant Pot models underperform at slow cooking on our lab test, and this lid didn't make it any better for me, Santa Tuche says. The beef stew came out tough and watery. Ooh. A springform cake pan at $13. The moist environment of a multi-cooker is ideal for making custardy desserts, and though it's possible to make cheesecake in your Instant Pot without it, this affordable 7.5-inch pan is designed to fit snugly in the inner pot and locks into the silicone steam rack below, left for easy removal. We'll go to that. It's the next thing. That's $13. The silicone steamer basket for $10. This is like a traditional bamboo steamer, but the silicone prevents the food from sticking. It locks into the silicone steam rack accessory, and you can meet them all, and you can nest three of them on top of each other. It did great job steaming dumplings and fish in my kitchen, Santa Tuche says. Silicone steam rack. This rack, which is a locking design to secure other accessories to it, such as the cake pan, is a game changer, Santa Tuche says. It holds the food high out of the water during steaming, and its long handles make it easy to lower and lift dishes in and out of the pot, and that's $9. And a yogurt maker cup set of five for $8. Yogurt made in a stainless steel insert can taste a wee bit metallic, Santa Tuche says. But when you pour milk straight into these plastic half-cup yogurt cups, it turns into yogurt without the mess of sterilizing milk directly in the pot. Then just put the cups in the fridge. Some cups thicken more than others. Keep your home treadmill workout interesting. This is what I need. To avoid the risk of going to a gym during the COVID-19 pandemic, many Americans have created at-home exercise programs for themselves, driving up sales for home gym equipment such as treadmills and fitness bikes. But running on your home treadmill all winter long can get boring fast. Make it a challenge to stay motivated. Here, experts offer easy ways to stay engaged. Try an interval training program. Check out the machine's built-in workout program, suggests Chris Gigliardi, personal trainer, medical exercise specialist, and health coach. There's often a variety of interval runs which alternate between an intense pace and a recovery pace. In general, these programs should take you out of your comfort zone, but there should be enough recovery time between sprints to get your breathing under control again. Switch up how you run. A good way to think fresh is to alternate between types of running. For example, progression runs, which gradually increase your speed, can help runners build endurance, says Robert Mangi, senior manager of the runner training and education at New York's Roadrunners. Start at a moderate pace, then increase speed by 0.5 to 1 mile per hour, and every 5 or 10 minutes so that you'll finish much faster than the pace you started at. Then try a tempo run, where runners try to maintain a quicker pace to improve speed. Warm up at a slow pace, then run at a faster pace for a set distance. Try 3 to 5 miles, and then cool down for a recovery pace. Manji also recommends hill running, where you run on an incline, adding intensity and building heart and lung health. Build in strength training. Your treadmill workout doesn't need to be all on the treadmill. Pause your run, let the belt come to a full stop, then get off the treadmill, use a resistance band, lift weights, or the body weight exercises such as push-up or squats before jumping back on. Repeat this circuit several times to work toward aerobic fitness and strength goals on the same day. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended doing strength training at least twice a week. Consider a sled workout. Some specially designed treadmills, or regular models with power turned off, can be used for a sled workout. This involves holding onto the handrails while the treadmill is off and pushing the belt with your feet to mimic the effects of pushing a weighted sled across the floor. Try this in 30-second bursts with rest in between to strengthen your legs. Check the manual to make sure pushing the belt with the motor off won't damage the machine or void its warranty. The top tested treadmills. If you're looking to start or upgrade your home gym, these machines perform well in CR's labs. At a score of 90, the best overall experience, but very pricey, is the Peloton Tread, $4,300. Yeah, I guess. At 76, fold away with very good performance is the Lifespan TR2000E at $1,200. That's similar to what I have. A 69 overall score, the budget-friendly folding buy is the Horizon Fitness T101 at $650. And this next one is very interesting because tomorrow, I'm recording this, obviously, prior to the program going live. I'm having my first coronavirus shot. your questions about the coronavirus vaccines answered. In a short period of time, less than 1 year, scientists managed to design, create, and test several potential vaccines for SARS-CoV-2, the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. Americans began receiving the first approved vaccine from Pfizer and BioNTech and another form of Moderna on December of 2020, with healthcare workers among the first in line. Today, vaccine distribution continues. You may even have gotten the vaccine already or know someone who has, but you also may still have questions about how these vaccines will affect you and your loved ones. Here, CR consulted with experts and combed through government guidance to answer some of the most common questions. What does it mean for the FDA to provide emergency use authorization? Because of the public health crisis caused by the ongoing pandemic, the Food and Drug Administration is empowered to provide expedited permission to distribute a vaccine before fully approving that vaccine, provided it meets certain standards for safety and efficacy. This constitutes an emergency use authorization designed to more quickly and easily enable the use of the vaccine. But it's still a rigorous process that balances the potential risk versus benefits. Before the first two vaccines were authorized this way, the manufacturers needed to provide at least 2 months of safety data on people who received the vaccine, which the FDA then reviewed. Where will I be able to get a vaccine? Vaccines will be distributed at a wide variety of locations, including hospitals, long-term care facilities, mobile and temporary clinics, doctor's offices, and pharmacies, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Are the coronavirus vaccines free? Yes. The U.S. government will pay for vaccines given to Americans, according to the CDC. Providers may charge a fee for administering the vaccine, but the government has mandated that insurers or the government, in the case of uninsured individuals, cover this fee, so people should not have any out-of-pocket expenses for a vaccination. How long does protection take to kick in? The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, most of the other vaccines that have completed or are in the last stage of trials before being submitted to the FDA for approval, require two doses, an initial shot and a booster, usually 7 weeks later. Generally, with a two-dose vaccine, it takes about 2 weeks from the second dose for the vaccine's protection to fully kick in, according to Natalie Dean, Ph.D., an assistant professor of biostatistics specializing in infectious disease and vaccine developments at the University of Florida. But though both doses are necessary, the FDA's analysis of the Pfizer vaccine indicates that people appear to be somewhat less likely to get COVID-19 within 2 weeks of receiving the first dose. It's unclear how long protection from that first dose may last, and the second dose is still required for full protection to ensure a more durable immune response. How effective are the COVID-19 vaccines? Very effective. In vaccine trials, roughly an equal number of participants received the real vaccine or placebo. Pfizer calculated its vaccine was approximately 95% effective, for example, after observing that 172 out of 181 COVID-19 cases that occurred in trial participants were in the placebo group, demonstrating that people who received the vaccine appear to be generally well protected. It's possible the degree of effectiveness in a real-world setting could be lower or higher, however. If I've had COVID-19, should I still get vaccinated? Researchers have a range of estimates on how long people may be protected from reinfection after recovering from COVID-19, varied from months to years. But because reinfection is possible, the CDC recommends that people who have recovered from COVID-19 still get vaccinated. Some of the vaccine trials included people who recovered from COVID-19, according to Catherine Newsell, MD, director of the Center for Vaccine Development and Global Health at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and appeared to be safe for these people to get the vaccine. Even if recovered patients have some natural immunity, the vaccine could provide longer-term benefits, she says. The immune system's natural response to a SARS-CoV-2 infection is varied, and in some cases, protection may not last very long. Will these vaccines put an end to the pandemic? Researchers are hopeful that vaccination campaigns will end the pandemic once there is sufficient vaccine supply and enough people get vaccinated. However, some experts caution that the whole world will need to have access to these vaccines for the disease threat to be fully eliminated. If the disease is still spreading somewhere, it could reemerge, especially if people's immunity wanes. And here's some recalls. Graco Incline Sleeper Accessories. Graco is recalling about 51,000 Incline Sleepers sold as accessories, included with the following play yards: Graco Pack and Play Day, Two Dream Play Yard with Bedside Sleeper, Graco Pack and Play Nuzzle Nest Play Yard, Graco Pack and Play Everest Play Yard, and Graco Pack and Play Rock and Grow Play Yard. This is due as infant fatalities that have been reported about similar Incline Sleep products. from other manufacturers. The sleepers were sold in stores and online from November 2017 through September 2020 for Day to Dream Play Yard and Bedside Sleepers, May 2015 through December 2018 for Nuzzle Nest Play Yard, September 2015 through December 2018 for Everest Play Yard, and December 2019 through April 2020 for Rock and Grow Play Yard for $270 to $350. The announcement marks the 11th recall of inclined sleepers and comes more than 1.5 years after CR uncovered dozens of deaths in connection with the Fisher-Price Rock and Play Sleeper and other inclined sleepers. To date, CR's investigation has prompted a recall of more than 6 million inclined sleepers sold by companies including Fisher-Price, Graco, Evenflo, and Delta. What to do? Stop using the sleeper accessory and contact Graco at 1-800-345-4109. Or go to recallsgreatgoatbaby.com for details and a refund. You can continue to use the play yard portion of the product and other included accessories. For more information on CR's infant sleeper investigation, go to cr.org/sleeper0321. Crock-Pot Multi-Cookers. Crock-Pot is recalling nearly a million Crock-Pot 6-Quart Express Crock Multi-Cookers because they can pressure when the lid is not fully locked. This can cause the lid to suddenly detach while the cooker is in use, posing a burn hazard. The cookers were sold at Walmart, Target, and other retail stores nationwide and online at Amazon and other retailers from July 2017 through November 2017 for $70 to $100. What to do? Stop using the Crock-Pot in pressure cooker mode, but you may continue to use it for slow cooking and sautéing. Call Crock-Pot at 800-323-9519. Or go to the retail recallcrockpot.com recall.crock-pot.com for details and to get a free replacement lid. Fiskars brand's pruners. Fiskars brand is recalling about 5,500,000 16-foot extendable pole saw pruners because the telescoping poles can separate, posing a laceration hazard. The pruners were sold at home improvement and hardware stores and online at Fiskars.com for December 2016 through September 2020 for about $100. What to do? Stop using the pole saw pruner and contact Fiskars brands at 888-847-8716 or go to Fiskars.com for instructions on how to dispose of the product in exchange for a full refund. Sure Scent Candles. Adco is calling about 145,000 SureScent 2-to-1 Peaceful Stream Moonlit Wave candles because the candle's high flame can ignite the surface of the wax or cause a glass to break, causing fire hazards. The candles were sold at Dollar Tree stores from July 2020 through September 2020 for a dollar. What to do? Stop using the candles and call Dollar Tree at 800-876-8697 or go to DollarTree.com for details and a full refund. Honda ROVs. Hondas are recalling about 118,600 Honda Pioneer 700 and 1,000 recreational off-highway vehicles, ROVs, with electric power steering because they can lose steering control, posing a crash hazard. The ROVs were sold at authorized Honda Power Sports dealers from August 2015 through March 2020 for about $10,000 to $21,000. What to do? Stop using the ROV and contact Honda Power Sports dealer for a free inspection repair. Craftsman Corded Chainsaws. Black & Decker is recalling about 82,000 Craftsman CME P600 10-inch corded chainsaws with extension poles because the chainsaw can start unexpectedly posing a laceration hazard, I'd say so. The chainsaws were sold at Lowe's and other hardware stores and online at Amazon from October 2019 through August 2020 for about $100. What to do? Stop using the chainsaw and contact Craftsman at 855-237-6848 or go to craftsman.com to get a free repair kit. And let's touch on a road before we end up here. EV charging options are on the rise. The number of electric vehicle charging stations has more than doubled since 2015. EV owners who charge at home will stop as few as 6 times at a public charging station every year, says Chris Hardo, CR's senior transportation analyst. But a more robust network of fast charging stations could help calm U.S. consumers' range anxiety and make EVs an option for those who lack access to home charging. And the number is, right now, it's risen from 2010 for less than 10,000 to all the way up to over 80,000 in 2019. Making pedestrians safer at night. Pedestrian detection systems offer great potential for preventing collisions with people or reducing their severity. Even so, more than 6,000 pedestrians were killed and 76,000 of them injured by vehicles in 2019. Many of these collisions with people occurred at night. Thermal imaging cameras, which can identify pedestrians by detecting their body heat, may offer a critical advantage in protecting people in the dark. Available on some 2021 model year vehicles, the thermal imaging could help improve the effectiveness of these systems, says Jennifer Stockberger, Director of Operations at CR's Test Track. The vital statistic, $38,521, is the average cost of a new car in October 2020, a $1,780 increase over 2019, according to the National Automobiles Association. And recalls of Chevy GMC. GM is recalling more than 625 Chevrolet and GMC SUVs and pickups with split bench front seats from model years 2019 to 2021. The front center seat belt may fail in a crash, causing injury or death. What to do? Call GMC at 800-462-8782 or Chevrolet at 800-222-1020. Find out if your vehicle is affected and where to go for a free repair to fix the problem. Don't use the front or seat position if you own an affected vehicle. We have about a minute and a half left, so let's close out with some life in these United States. Prior to dinner, my 80-year-old mother-in-law stopped off at the beauty parlor. All the women did was complain about their husbands, she said over our entrees. Did you complain about your husband? I asked, adding a sly nod toward my father-in-law. I didn't have to, she said. They all know about him. My friend George adopted an adorable but stubborn Australian Terrier puppy. He refused to be housebroken. Frustrated, George signed them both up for expensive obedience classes. Recently, I saw a man and pup out for a walk and asked how the training went. Well, George said, at least I don't poop in the house anymore. Prayers for my husband, who very tragically got me nothing for our anniversary when I specifically told him I wanted nothing for our anniversary. Maybe it's the harsh winters, but people from Maine are known to be tough nuts to crack. Consider this evidence courtesy of author Jennifer Finney Boylan. There's a story about the time Mark Twain gave a reading at a bookstore near Bangor to a crowd that sat there in stony silence, she wrote in the New York Times. Afterwards, Twain heard a couple talking. The wife said, I think that might have been the funniest person I've ever heard in my life. The husband replied, I tell you, he was so funny it was all I could do to keep from laughing. And with those giggles, we run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available for Braille as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. Thanks so much for listening.